Hear a squawk. On this episode of the Pine Talk, Ezra and Peter will share their stock of information to keep you up to date around the clock.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of Pine Talk,
the podcast for the Pine 64 community by members of the Pine 64 community.
I am Peter, head of the department of boring videos that always look the same at linmob.net.
And I am Ezra, internet content creator and software poet.
In this episode, we'll be discussing some Pine 64 community news, as well as keeping in touch with your questions and feedback. But first, what have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been generally disconnecting from online social interactions, trying to relax a bit more. I've actually managed to finish up a personal little website, Eletronion.com, where I keep various projects of mine from games to videos. What about you?
Well, I've been having a look at all the Manjaro daily dev builds and made a video about that. And lately I've been working on adding AppStream IDs to linmobapps.framer.io, that app list I maintain. The idea behind this is to have basically clickable links, which then open in a software management app like Discover, so that you can then easily install those apps on your phone.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but it isn't working yet, so don't know whether it will be working once this episode is out or whether I will have to tinker a bit longer on that.
Well, I wish you the best of luck for sure.
And if I shouldn't be able to make it, maybe someone can help out. That would be highly appreciated. Okay, now let's get to the topics.
We're going to start by mentioning the community update, as they mentioned a lot of interesting stuff, starting with the Quartz 64.
So the Quartz 64 single board computer is featuring that Rockchip RK3566 quad-core Cortex A55 processor, which is clocked up to 1.8 GHz and has an ARM Mali G52 GPU, which is supporting OpenGL-ES up to 3.2 and Vulkan 1.1. So that's a pretty good GPU, and it's also supported by the PanFrost driver in the Linux kernel. So yeah, GPU acceleration is going to work on that thing basically like out of the box.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, what's also great is it's going to have up to 8 GB of RAM, LPDDR4 RAM, which is actually a step up from the ROG Pro 64, which tops out at 4 GB of RAM. And this is not the Pro model, so I think that's quite nice to have more RAM, because, you know, if you're running those Electron apps, they will eat up all your RAM. but then, do you really run Electron apps on a single board computer? But there are going to be use cases where more RAM is going to prove really useful, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, for sure. If for nothing else, not that you'd use a single board computer for this either, but web browsers and web browsing can also take a lot of RAM.
Yeah, this could maybe even be some kind of internet terminal that you could use. So with graphics acceleration and enough RAM. Of course, the next thing is storage. And there it has SPI flash. You can use an optional eMMC module with up to 128 gigabytes of capacity. You can boot it from a microSD card. And it has a serial ATA3 port. So you can connect a regular, good old hard disks or hard disk style SSD drives, which is quite handy as well.
The Quartz 64 has support for HDMI 2.0 4K, up to 4K, 60 FPS, which is pretty cool. And a four-lane EDP up to 2560 by 1600 at 60 hertz, and a four-lane MIPI DSi up to 1440p, SPI touch panel port, and SPI with interrupt. I'll be honest, I only know what HDMI is in the list of things there.
Yeah, EDP is embedded display port, so that's for connecting a screen right to the single board computer, like you would with an internal screen. And MIPI DSi is something else that might be for e-ink displays. I'm not totally certain there, but yeah.
Could make sense.
Another kind of way to connect a display, and the rest is for touch panels mostly.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Controls, so yeah.
Otherwise, it has a camera, four-lane MIPI CSI camera interface up to 8 megapixels,
which is also fairly nice. And networking is up to gigabit Ethernet, so that's pretty cool. And then you've got optional Wi-Fi and up to Wi-Fi AC, so that's Wi-Fi 5, I think, by the newer convention. And you've got Bluetooth 5.0 with SDIO, but both of those are optional.
You got USB 3. No, you got 3 USB 2.0 host ports and 1 USB 3.0, which is that's pretty good. You can, there's also 2 10-pin GPIO headers, PCIe 2x open-ended slot for PCIe 2.0. Wait, am I reading this right? How am I not reading this right?
The PCIe thing?
Yeah,
that's difficult. I think it's a PCIe 2.0, that's the standard, and then 1x is the bandwidth. So with graphics cards, we've got those 8x, 16x 16. Interfaces usually.
Yeah.
And so 1x is basically the smallest one, and the slot is open-ended, so that you can put in cards that maybe would also work with PCIe 4x, and you can then use them at lower speeds. So that could be, for example, be used to connect some NVMe drive. So you're not going to get the full speed then, but you can at least connect it.
Mm-hmm. That can be good. And I heard of this could be interesting for converters for external graphics cards. I've seen that use NVMe. Is that right?
Yeah, but then you could maybe put that graphics card right into PCIe, right?
So anyway, moving on. there's a clock, RTC battery connector.
Yeah, for real-time clock. And then power is supplied by a 12 volts, 3 ampere DC barrel jack, so that amounts to 36 watts. And it has a connector for lithium batteries, so that you can power it by a battery too. Essentially, with all these features, you could develop or you could build your own PinePhone 2 or something already. It would be really chunky and thick, but you could do it.
Yeah.
And it would be quite wide, because the dimensions of the board are 13.3 × 8 × 1.9 centimeters, to not put it in millimeters. I don't know what that is in inches. I'm sorry.
Neither do I. Yeah, I'm getting pretty inspired with a few ideas, if not for creating a PinePhone replacement, but to replace or to create, embedded machines. I think it could be fun to connect up some touch display to this and have some kind of like the Google Home things with the displays, or I think Amazon has one too. So you could easily create a touchscreen smart home appliance that's fully open source.
Yeah, and you can then run Minecraft on it.
Exactly.
On the Pine phone, but we're going to get to that later. Now, they are also going to supply that 10.3-inch E-Ink display, so that plan is still going on too. So that's something I was excited about earlier. And it runs faster than the predecessors, so this is going to eventually replace the Pine A64 and the ROG 64. And it's running quite cool, which is nice. So, because other embedded systems really need that passive cooling, and this thing can run under load without any coolers, and it doesn't get older than like hotter than 60 degrees Celsius. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Of course, development is just starting, and I think it will, as always, take a while until we're going to have good mainline Linux support, but the components and the design of the device look really promising. So I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah. And we don't only have the Quartz 64, but we have a RISC-V single board computer with two RISC-V system on it chips on it.
Yes, we do. And this is quite an interesting thing. So one of those chips is a one we don't is one we know already, and that's the Buffalo BL602, which is, if you know it maybe from that Nutcracker challenge, is a thing that does Wi-Fi and Bluetooth low energy. So that's going to be used for connectivity on this device. And then there's the main system, and that's a 64-bit RISC-V CPU or system on a chip, and that's the Allwinner Xuan TC906 system on a chip. It is clocked at up to 1 gigahertz usually. Is made in a 22 nanometers manufacturing process. It has a GPU, but it's only a 2D accelerator. It has a VPU that's for that's a video processing unit that supports H265 and H264. System memory, well, we don't know that yet. So apparently 64 megabytes to 256 megabytes of DDR3 can be built into the processor. So that would be one package, is what they call that. Or you can also add external memory. So that's a different chip on the mainboard. And it supports storage via micro SD socket, and can supports also HDMI out at, I think, up to full HD at 60 frames per second. It can support a gigabit Ethernet, Mac, the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth module, we know what that is, and it has USB 2.0. So I would guess that it's going to have 512 megabytes of RAM or less. So it's likely either 512 megabytes or 256, which kind of limits the use cases for this system, for this single board computer. But I think it's still nice to have such an affordable RISC-V computer. What do you think, Ezra?
I agree. Yes, that's the reason I'm most excited about this, is because I want to play with some Risk Five stuff, and most other boards that I know of, they're not as affordable. I like the price. Yeah. I like its size, and I like that it's really more of a, as far as I see it, something to experiment with Risk Five on. It's a nerd device.
I agree. I think there was another board in around this price bracket that was announced by, maybe it was Sci5 itself previously, using, by the way, the same main system on a chip. But still, the fact that this is also using a RISC-V chip for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth makes it double the fun. So you can then use one single board computer to play with RISC-V 64-bit and RISC-V 32-bits. And yeah, that architecture still feels quite foreign to me, I've got to say. Because there are all those letters that then get added up to it and in the end. And that's why we've put a link into the show notes, linking to an article by CNX Software that is called RISC-V Basis and Extension Explained, where you can read up on all that stuff. Because, yeah, why would we talk about it when we still don't really know what all of that means in practice and layman's terms? But yeah, I'm definitely going to get one of these and maybe use it as a pie hole, if that should work on the RISC-V platform already, because it sounds like it could do that, even if it just even if it should have just 256 megabytes of RAM. That could be enough for some DNS magic. Yeah, but I think we might continue now to something we know a lot more about. And that is the PinePhone. So there's been some PinePhone news too in this Show and Tell February community update. And of course, there's something that we already discussed, like open sourcing the modem and all of that stuff. But there's also news about that keyboard that they're going to do.
And we now know that the default OS that is going to be on the PinePhones is Manjaro Plasma Mobile.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
About the OS or the keyboard?
First about the keyboard.
Well, I think the keyboard is really cool, and I can't wait to see how it is in practice. I enjoy the massive battery compartment that it holds.
Oh, yeah.
6,000 milliamp hours.
Yeah, that's really like double the capacity of the PinePhone. So you're tripling active battery life if you're using that thing.
Yeah, I see. You get a keyboard and you get more power. I don't see the negative.
Well, it's more bulky.
More bulky. That could be a pro, depending on who you ask.
But no, I always know where my phone is because it's giant.
Yeah, you can't miss it, that's for sure. And you'll get people asking, hey, what's that? And you can be like, oh, this? It's just my PinePhone with the keyboard attachment.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm also quite excited for that. You know, I did that Scion Series 5 PDA mod where just took that main board out of the thing and then used that former PDA as a PinePhone keyboard. But this is just a lot better in the finished product. So I'm quite excited about that. I'm really curious how easy it will be to put the PinePhone in and out of that case. And well, how well I can get used to that keyboard, because Turns out with my keyboard I built myself, I'm not using it that much. But then, yeah, it doesn't really fit as well, and I can't close the thing with the PinePhone in it. So this is an entirely different story. And the battery alone makes this really attractive, because let's say you carry your PinePhone and the keyboard case with you, and you don't have the PinePhone in that keyboard case all the time. Then you can put it in once your battery is running out, and it's basically charging again. So maybe that would work, but we will have to see whether that will actually work in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And how easy it will be to do phone calls still. So from what I read in the comments of the community update, Lukasz recommends using a headset. And, well, I mostly try to use a headset for phone calls anyway, so that sounds reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, if you have to answer phone call quickly, if you've got a wired headset, that always takes some time. So, yeah, we will see. But generally, this is quite exciting news regarding the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing we don't have to worry about with this keyboard is we won't have to worry about those Phosh top and bottom bars in that keyboard case in landscape mode, because Manjaro Plasma Mobile is the new default PinePhone mm-hmm. OS. Have you used it lately? What do you think?
I have not. I've seen your video about Plasma Mobile. I haven't even checked out Manjaro Plasma Mobile yet, but I did want to. I think just guesstimating on how the experience would be. I know that the Plasma Mobile team has been doing a good job, have been adding a lot of new things and definitely making a familiar environment to your standard Android user and Apple user too. It looks more like a traditional phone experience, what they're trying to design. And I like Manjaro. I like the openness they provide. So I see Manjaro Plasma Mobile being a good choice, even though I haven't used it yet. What about you? Have you used it?
Yeah, I'm using it. I've been using the not unstable version that doesn't get updated all the time for a while on and off. And now I'm, after the video, I kept using this unstable version, which is really moving fast. Of course, this sometimes means that stuff breaks and then you get another update and it's fixed again. but it didn't break in a way that would have rendered it unusable. So, yeah, you can. I think after using it like that for 3 to 5 days, not really sure how long I have that. Yeah, anyway. And it didn't break completely. I think it's almost safe to use. And in this unstable version especially, it's really fast and smooth. So that's talking animations. Not everything is really fast and smooth, but it's the best I've seen Plasma perform, like, ever on the PinePhone. I mean, app start times of heavy apps are not that aren't quicker than they are anywhere else, because, well, yeah, that's the Alwin A64 that's to blame for that. But generally, this is nice, and it's only has only been getting better.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been playing with web apps in Anglefish for a bit, so that's a feature that works now. So it's been there for a while, but I never got it to work. But if you are on a website that can be used as a web app, like, for example, hydrogen.element.io, which is a mobile element client for the web, and then you hit add to home screen, then you will have a home screen item that you can then tip, and it's basically a Chromeless web app window. That feature is especially important because Firefox doesn't really run well on Plasma Mobile yet, and you can't use Chromium with Ozone because then the keyboard doesn't show up. So there are still quite some bugs to fix. Also, if I may have one feature request, I would really like a feature similar to Scale to Fit on Fosh for Plasma Mobile, so that we can use all those apps that don't quite fit the screen and haven't been optimized for the phone. I believe that's not really fitting in with their philosophy, but it would be really nice to have that because it just adds so much usefulness. But then again, eventually apps will be converted or adjusted, and you know, they will have some time until this gets shipped on the post community edition PinePhone, and I'm really, really sure that it's going to be really great then, and it's going to be, and I'm really putting myself on a soapbox here and saying this is going to be the best OS the PinePhone has ever shipped when it then ships. I'm pretty sure of that.
You heard that, Manjaro? Plasma Mobile?
Yeah, that's quite the endorsement, huh? Who would have thought?
Well, I'm definitely going to be flashing that soon.
You really should. Yeah, honestly.
Sure. Yeah, all right. Because I know what my next video is going to be about.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Anyway, great. we can get into your at-home feedback and questions.
Yes, let's do that. Because after all, this is not Ezra and Peter talking. This is a community podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's get started. So I'm going to butcher this nickname. I'm sorry. Logan Kine at Fosterdon.org asks, have you all tried SXMO on PinePhone? I know it sounds crazy, but DWM is the best and fastest interface I've ever used on a phone. It's amazing how much you can do with only 3 buttons and a tiling window manager. Sarza, have you used SimpleX Mobile?
I partially used it once, but definitely not enough to say that I actually did in fact use it. So I don't have experience with that, but we'll check it out soon.
Right after that Manjaro Plasma video.
Exactly. What about you?
Yeah, I've had a look at it multiple times. And I've even installed it on one of my PinePhones prior to this recording. And I mean, I like that idea. I like that they don't just have those button presses that I can't remember, but also gestures that I might eventually be able to remember if I use it for a long time. But there's my problem. I'm really struggling to use this. You know, when I want to suspend it, it's not tapping the power button once because that's doing something else. So it's just breaking my muscle memory I've developed with phones over the years. And I've been a tiling window manager user, but I don't know, it's different having 3 keys on a PinePhone to having a full keyboard with all those modifier keys and stuff that you then use. So, well, maybe I'm going to have more fun with it once that keyboard dock is there. I mean, that might change the game with SXMO for me. But for now, I have to say, I just can't wrap my brain around it. I'm sorry, I'm not stupid. I'm not smart enough. Yeah, I'm not smart enough. I'm too stupid. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the idea of a tiling window manager on a phone is interesting, though, because it's a new concept, and I wonder if it can be modernized to some degree as time goes on. But then again, I haven't experienced SXML on the PinePhone yet, so.
Yeah, I mean, I've used basically tiled window manager like stuff on phones before. You know, on Android, you can make it so that you can use two apps at once. But that's way easier than using SXMO, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
And while I really like using two apps at one time, I just can't remember all these gestures. And, you know, if I can't even suspend that phone reliably, then I'm going to run out of battery no matter what. But I have to say, it's quick, and that keyboard, once you get used to it, is quite nice too. So, and by the way, I can remember that keyboard gesture, so yeah, I guess not all is lost. And if I were forced to use it for, I don't know, a week, I maybe would be able to do so efficiently, but there's quite some hurdle to overcome initially, and that's what I'm struggling with.
You can find the dot on the keyboard.
Yeah.
next up, Mark at metalhead.club asks, how far off is a RISC-V PinePhone? Well, Mark, as we discussed earlier, you could get yourself the RISC-V board and... Oh, no, we were saying that about the quartz board. Well, pick up the RISC-V board and make a PinePhone out of it.
Yeah, you could maybe try that. I don't know whether it has the interfaces to connect a screen to it and how you would connect a modem, but in theory, you could build that. But I think, yeah, that's quite a way off. Honestly, I wouldn't expect any RISC-V phone before... Boom. Well, you know, whatever I say. If I say, well, before next year, then I may be right, technically, because there's going to be one RISC-V phone in China, because I recently read that Android had been ported over to RISC-V. So, yeah, there might be some people working on that, on a RISC-V phone. But a RISC-V PinePhone, I don't see that coming in the next 4 years. Honestly, there's so much to do with generally getting Linux to run properly on RISC-V first. Then it would be nice to have a RISC-V powered LTE modem too. Those, I don't know of anything like that, or, well, by then it would be 5G, right? A RISC-V 5G modem. Tons of fives in there. But yeah, I don't see that coming anytime soon. But then he put the winky's smiley in there. So yeah, it's more a joke question. So thank you, Mark, for that one.
Yeah. Liam Smith emailed us saying, I would like to hear your opinion on Pine making workstations. Obviously, something like Avantex or Solid Run would be amazing, and I am sure that Pine could make it at a more accessible price. Do you think that this will happen, or is Pine still too much of a fringe project to catering to a to cater to a Tinker audience?
Oh yeah, we had to look those workstations up earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we did, because I wouldn't have guessed how much money you can pay for an ARM workstation. Well, you know, those Avantech workstations start at something like $3,000, if yeah, that's the right currency even.
The low price.
Yeah, that's their lowest price one, and they've got one that's at five figures, so 11,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like your standard desktop computer, and then they've got like 32 cores and so on. So, yeah. Well, I definitely am not going to get one of those. And with SolidRun, you can actually get a mini ITX board for $750.
Mm-hmm.
But then you would have to add the RAM. But I think it takes standard laptop DDR4 RAM. So maybe you have that already. And yeah, would have to add a case and so on to have a full workstation. So you would be talking about a $1,000 system then, and that would have a 16-core NXP chip in it that has 16 Cortex A72 cores. So, yeah. Now, we didn't talk to Lukasz before about this question. So, we really don't know nothing. And honestly, I think I would actually rather buy an ARM computer by that fruit company than getting one of these things.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
Yeah, same. I mean, my pockets aren't that deep to begin with. I don't know how powerful they are, like bang per buck necessarily. But I don't know. To me, they don't seem worth it.
Yeah, it's maybe worth it if you just have those ARM workloads. Like if you mm-hmm. don't want to cross compile for some reason and you need to build all those packages for your Linux distro all the time on an ARM machine, and that stuff could save time. So if you're a company that has to build tons of packages all the time for the ARM platform, I mean,
mm-hmm.
If you save time by that, then that's worth the money. But for a normal person, even an ARM enthusiast, I really don't see why people would get that. I mean, I rather have to say that I rather understand those people that have invested in that high five unmatched RISC-V workstation, because that has this novelty of RISC-V to it that makes it more exciting than one of these ARM workstations. Now, do we think that this would be a product for Pine64? Honestly, we don't know. You know, maybe if TL gets it into his head and he's like, hey, I want to have this now, then they might make some. But we don't know what's going in other people's brain, do we?
No. Yeah. Well, like, the only thing... I mean, there was also the fact that, you know, if there's a desire, a large enough desire, I'm sure they'd consider it, since it is kind of near their domain. But I don't see that as being their focus. I think they're going to focus more on smaller embedded systems.
Yeah, I think that too. Because it's really hard. I mean, even if you make it a lot cheaper than these workstations at the same performance, I think that some cheap AMD Ryzen or Threadripper build, well, not really in that price range, but or maybe in that Avantex price range, right? But would still likely be better in terms of performance per dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that makes it a lot less interesting generally.
Lastly, we try to keep improving. That's why we're including chapter markers on the video platforms this time and a link to the full show notes of the episode so that video users don't miss out.
The podcast is in progress of being listed in all the directories you suggested. We are still working on that. Because it's really hard, unfortunately, to get that done. And yeah, we'll eventually not mention this anymore once we can report full success.
Also, if you are using the MP3 feed, check out the chapter markers. Thanks again to NerdZoom Media for being our audio producers.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Remember, this is a community podcast, so please leave feedback on what we should do better, what we should talk about, and get your suggestions in and feel free to ask questions. Every question is welcome.
You can join the Discord channel, Pine Talk Podcast, on Pine64's Discord. You can send us an email at pinetalk@pine64.org.
And tweet at us. We're at TalkPine.
Yep.
Have a great 2 weeks and talk to you soon.
Yeah. So we love spending time with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.